This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. I will eventually drive back home, but I'm actually at home right now. And because I work from home today, and you know, there's a possibility that this is going to kind of be the thing for the next year, at least. We'll see. I think Dustin told me the other day that he is going to be, well, maybe not, that he is going to be on the schedule to work pretty much every Tuesday and Thursday for the next year. But even then, he'll still have to pick up additional, at least one additional day every other week in order to keep his 36 hours up. So, you know, that will at least mean that I'll be taking Aiden to school on those days. Now, as long as Springfield Public School System remains open, will be great. But we do have summer school coming up, and we do have the end of summer school coming up, and then only Sparks being available, and Sparks won't change diapers. So that kind of knocks us out for Aiden for that. But you know what? We're in this project together. We're going to get this figured out. So, you know, if that means that come July, I need to watch Aiden for 3 days a week and then 2 days a week, we're going to get this done. Because this is really important for Dustin's future. So it will be fine. And this is the year, so come July, I will be cutting down to 16 hours a week, or 64 hours a month, whichever comes first. So that will give me extra time, and we're going to get this done. So anyways, that's one piece of news at the advent of this year. As far as the rest of the stuff goes, I'm currently working on Tell a Fairy Tale Day. Well, I'm working on Tell a Fairy Tale Day, but then I'm also working on a quick costume in January, because of the way the days fall in January, there's actually going to be a gap between National Argyle Day and Rubber Ducky Day and Polka Dot Day and Big Hair Day, Big Wig Day. So if we would start the first on January 1st, or if we would start, well, unless we start the first, sorry, I didn't say that right, on a Friday, we always celebrate New Year's on the Friday before the 1st, so we actually do New Year's in December. So if we start, not that you care about this stuff, but if we start New Year's on the Friday, it means that you still have the 8th and then the 15th and then the 22nd and the 29th, and there is enough holidays in there. There's actually 5 Fridays in there. Not enough holidays, but there's enough, well, holidays in there that I can do New Year's and then Argyle and Polka Dot and Rubber Ducky Day and then Big Wig Day, and then we're fine. But in all other circumstances, we shift that New Year's celebration into December. And then once we do that, we end up with only 4 holidays in January. And if there are 5 Fridays, then what I'll do is I'll just shift in and I'll add this new holiday, which is Manuary. So I got my stuff in for that today. So when I get back to the house, I'm not only going to try on the costume for tomorrow, which is Argyle Day, but I'm also going to try on the costume for Manuary. So this should be fun because it's a lumberjack costume. So that should be fun. I'm also working on Tell a Fairy Tale Day, which is a little paper puppet stage for A Princess Bride. So I've been building the backdrops and all the paper puppets and using ChatGPT for all of that. And that's all good and well. Now I have to actually figure out the puppet stage. And I got the idea that maybe what I would do is I would get a little antique suitcase and build it so that it would all collapse down and fold into the little antique suitcase. And I kept looking and kept looking and kept looking for a suitcase that was large enough, couldn't find anything. I had ordered a little 15-inch suitcase, quickly realized that that probably wasn't going to be big enough, and actually started doing some sketching last night and confirmed that, yeah, that's not going to work. There's no way that's going to work. And then did searching on Amazon, tried searching for some different things, finally stumbled across two little suitcases that have a really antique, scuffed up look on the outside of them, and looks like something that would, you know, that would be pretty good. And so I did go ahead and order those. They were a little more expensive than I was wanting, but not too bad. And then after I ordered them, Jesus whispered and said, you know, you could use both of them by connecting them. I'm like, oh, right. So that's what we're going for at the moment. I'm actually going to have a little smaller suitcase and then a larger one than the one I had ordered. And the larger one will become the base for the puppet stage. And then the smaller one will become my stand to hold the story, and then potentially have all my characters so that I can go ahead and grab them out of it and have my characters that way. So we'll see. Still working out the details about how everything will fold up and go back into the stage. And it looks like I'm probably going to have to get some red velvet to make some little curtains and those things. But this should be fun. It's going to be fun. It'll come out fun. And it's the fairy tale I have written, and it's fun, and I can do impersonations, and it's impressions, I should say, and it's fun. So it'll be good. Anyways, so costumes are all going good. I am ramping up mentally for Big Wig Day, because that, of all the costumes I have, that costume is likely the strangest to wear. Latex is just weird. But people enjoyed the costume last year, and it reinforces a suspicion that I have about the analysis of what constitutes male and female clothing. So I've been thinking a lot about this, and I've been talking about this to friends. The whole idea that, as Jordan Peterson has pointed out, that our visual cortex and our sight is connected to story just like the rest of our brain. And he talks about the fact that there's all sorts of processing that's going on in the optic nerves as it's heading back from the rods and the cones through the optic nerves, you know, as it's hitting your visual cortex in your brain. There's all sorts of processing that's happening there. And in fact, by the time it makes there, we've already started to assign stories to it. So against that backdrop, you start thinking about, so in other words, if we have accepted certain stories about appearance without really realizing all the permutations and all the consequences of accepting those stories whole hog without being critical about them, if we've done that, then it's quite easy to see how men especially would be continually promoting the idea that certain pieces of cloth are feminine. So short skirts, for instance, are feminine, even though it's just a piece of cloth, and even though Fijians wear sulus, granted they're not usually short skirts, but they are sulus. I was looking for a place to turn around, but I don't think we'll do it there. Maybe we'll do it on this little bridge. And Scotsmen wear kilts, and those aren't necessarily feminine. Granted, they aren't short. But what you come to when you start accepting this idea that there is a lot of pre-processing going on, I'm turning the car around here, that you can understand more that there are certain combinations of things that are getting pre-processed before it ever hits our visual cortex, and they're already getting assigned functionalities. And part of those functionalities are the identification of this being in front of us, this human being in front of us, although we're not recognizing it as a human being at that point. What we're really doing is we're assigning it as an object and as a tool, so that what happens is the short skirt is an, or leggings, or, you know, tight clothing is a function of describing a potential tool to help men control their sperm count, or as a potential energy that helps women classify whatever is in front of them in terms of the social hierarchy as to what level that entity fulfills. I think they're both dehumanizing processes, but I think it's obvious that reducing a person to an evaluation as a tool is a far more dehumanizing process. However, I have two instances of costumes that are fairly tight bodysuits. Certainly the latex is just glued. I mean, it's just stretches everywhere, so it's glued. The Lion King costume is also fairly tight. I mean, I always wear other things to ensure that there are no discrete outlines of genitals. Everything at least is reduced to just a mound, you know, a non-gender specific mound. But the Lion King and the bigwig costume do not produce the same type of reactions as I have had when I am in something like the Drag Queen Bee outfit with its short skirt and, you know, fishnet stockings and the whole bit, even though the face is this horrible bee glasses with this spiky hair, and it's not attractive at all. But the head is, you know, my physical head, with my eyes. That head is in proportion to size, whereas with the big wig day, it's this big, foam wig, you know, that is whatever, 18 inches across. And with the Lion King costume, you have this big artifact on top of my head that is, you know, supposed to be a puppet head of a lion. And I just suspect that part of what is happening is that all of that pre-processing that's going on in, like, the optic nerve and the beginning stages of the visual cortex, I just suspect that the pre-processing is not immediately identifying and evaluating me in terms of tools for use or entities that exist in a social hierarchy, because the proportions are so far off. Because there's this huge upper component that slips me away from an immediate identification as a human, and therefore it softens the immediate evaluation as to whether I can function as a tool or I occupy a certain place in social hierarchies. That's very interesting. To me, this is very interesting. So that's another little piece of the puzzle then. And that's an intriguing piece of the puzzle. What it means is that you can short circuit that nearly instantaneous identification of a piece of fabric being identified as masculine or feminine based on a distortion of the typical ratios of head to torso to legs, you know, to chest, etc., etc. So if you distort, especially the head, you can disrupt that identification. So it's just a little tidbit. So, but, you know, whenever I get to this time of the year, well, certainly last year, which was the first year for the Bigwig Day, and certainly as I was ramping up to The Lion King, which wasn't the first year last year, but the preceding year, there was always that, okay, how is this going to be received? But with that understanding then, it changes a little bit how I prepare for these things mentally. So it's really interesting. That's very interesting. So anyways, that's costumes. I am dropping into the second sprint now on book 22. That should go well. It should go well because I only have 60,000 words left. I think I know what the rest of the story should be, and there's plenty of excitement in the story and, you know, plenty of tension in the story, and so that it should be fairly easy to get written out. I will have a few interruptions. I've got a new phone coming in this weekend, which I thought was going to take some time, and I may have been happy to discover that it's not actually going to take as much time as I thought, because I started to look up, you know, how do I transfer to a new Android phone, and I might have known this in the past, but it certainly came as a surprise again when I came across the YouTube video that said, oh yeah, if you're going from a Samsung to a Samsung, all you have to do is go to, it's called, what is it called? Smart Switch, I think it's called. And so you just set up the new phone, get it taken care of, then on the new phone you go receive, and on the old phone you go transmit, and it just wirelessly pushes it right across. And supposedly takes care of all of it, and you just have to keep it plugged in to where it doesn't lose power and walk away. And, you know, hour and a half later, done. And everything gets transferred, including your Samsung and Google accounts. And then what you have to do is you just have to run through all the permission stuff and get the stuff set up. The only thing that I've been concerned about at all is the Fortinet stuff that allows me to sign into work on a remote desktop. But I talked to the guy who handles the setups on that, and he told me, listen, just call me this weekend whenever you get ready to go. He said, I'll send you the link and you can set it up and, you know, just run it on your machine and everything will be great. So I appreciate him doing that for me. So I've got that. Plus I have a new laptop that I've purchased that's coming in next week. And so there's going to be a little bit of delay in some of the writing, but I think we're going to be okay. And then once I get this done, once I get this one done, then it goes to beta. Then I start book 23. But even if for some reason I have difficulty getting the first half of book 23 done, once I hit June, or once I hit July, it's because June is going to be spent, if all things go to plan, June is going to be spent building the production version of 22. And then once I hit July, I mean, my schedule just loosens up. And then I just have the last two books to write and to get everything kind of wrapped up. And then we go from there. Whoa, hey. So let's see. This is Shelby Road. I think we want to go down Shelby Road, I think. Anyway, so that's that. So we have, let me... it'll be fine. I was going to check and see how far I'm actually from home, but it's fine. I can keep talking for a while. This week, you may have already heard of this because it has definitely been going viral. My godson is in town. I had breakfast with him last week. About a month ago, I think, he had sent me... Let's see, where am I here? I'm coming up on some sort of an interchange. I may just go ahead and open up Android here for a minute because I'm not exactly sure where I am. So let me just see where... Man, let me shut that off. Shut off that. Okay. I am 12 minutes from home. I'm going to go ahead and... Yeah, I am going to go ahead and have it start guiding me in.
In a quarter mile, turn left onto State Highway CC.
Oh, okay. So once I'm... Oh, okay. Now I know where I am. I've been just sort of wandering around, and I have actually made it over to Fair Grove. So, yes. As soon as I turn onto CC, this is where I was expecting.
Take
I wanted
the next
to come in. Yeah, okay. We got it. All right. So let me just turn on to CC here, and then we're good to go. Boop. You just back up here a little bit. Allow a person to come in. And okay, now we're on CC, and I'm going to turn down the volume on this so that I can just watch that as we go and we don't have to hear it giving us instructions. Okay, so you may have already heard of the topic that I'd like to talk about tonight. On the off chance that you haven't, you will have soon. My godson sent me this podcast, this documentary podcast. It has 10 episodes, season one. And it is fascinating. It's really, really fascinating. It released its first episode in September of 2024. Episode 10 was just released in the first week of December 2024, if I've got my facts correct. And within December, it actually became the number one podcast on something. I don't know if it was Amazon or Apple or something. I mean, it has certainly hit its stride. And I will tell you right away that while I'm about to share some glowing things about it, I understand completely the caveats that some skeptics would have about it, because you are dealing with somewhat difficult environments that can be somewhat subject to interpretation, or for those who are determined to find an alternate explanation, there are explanations that could be found with a somewhat minimal amount of work. If you wanted to make claims that border on reasonability. So the series is called The Telepathy Tapes. And it concerns autistic children who are nonverbal. Highly recommend, if you have any interest at all, to listen to the series, because it's fascinating. Without giving a lot away about it, there is a trailer out on the telepathytapes.com that you could go watch, a film trailer. There is no film yet. They are actually trying to raise money to produce a film. The podcast is created by a woman named Kai Dickinson, I think. Kai something. Anyways. She had heard about a researcher who has been researching this phenomenon for years and years. And in fact, on the trailer, they show archival footage of her talking about this. And it's obvious that this footage comes from the 80s, maybe? I mean, she's got the big 80s hair and the whole bit. And she says, and then there's a later clip of her talking about the fact that they took away her medical license when she tried to publish her results on this. It was restored after the entities that took away her medical license actually read and reviewed what she was saying. But nonetheless, in all of this, and she says, you know, once they took away my medical license and tried to ruin my reputation, she said, I was bound and determined. I was going to keep researching this, and I was going to show that it's actually happening. Because what she was investigating was claims from parents in many disparate areas and around the world that their autistic, non-verbal children could read their minds. And when this researcher that was, you know, a podcaster, documentarian, found out about this researcher, she contacted this researcher. She said she wanted to do a podcast on this. The researcher said, great, because she's been trying to get more attention on this issue. And the researcher gave her the names of some children. She said, you need to go see so-and-so. And these are the types of tests that you can run to demonstrate what we're talking about here. Now, anecdotally, the parents themselves, simply from being around the children, have known for years that something was going on. There were too many things, too many occurrences, for it to be coincidental. When we say nonverbal for these children, it doesn't mean that they don't have a way to communicate. And in fact, this has been part of the big surprise with these children, because the parents have been told consistently that with nonverbal autistic children, that there's no one there. Now then, I have to figure out where the road is. There it is. There's a switchback here that's easy to miss. That is the way to get back home. So I have to find this switchback. There we go. Okay. Which is the reason that I wanted the GPS on, because in the daytime it's easy to miss this particular switchback. This isn't the normal way I come in. I'm actually coming in from the north as opposed to the south. So because these parents had been experiencing things that just seemed odd, like, you know, their kids loved candy, and they would come home with candy and they would try to sneak it into the house, and they would hide it somewhere, and then when they saw their children would just make a beeline for wherever they wherever they hid their candy. In addition, when we say nonverbal, we don't mean they have no communication path. Before there was a communication path, these children were considered to be gone. They just weren't even there. But in recent years, we've learned how to do spelling with punch boards. And there is a little bit of controversy with some of all that. That's all clearly talked about in the podcast. But the children could spell out words with these punch boards. They can spell out words with tablets, special programs on tablets. Some of them can draw. So there is a way they can communicate even though they're nonverbal. And in fact, once these children start learning how to communicate, even though they're nonverbal, then at times these children are making claims about what they're able to do. For instance, when they're asked by a parent, usually the mom, can you read my mind? They say yes. Okay. So, and when they're, you know, told, well, prove it, I think one mom had gone to Target, and this child could tell the mom everything she bought at Target. So when this researcher for this podcast decided that she was wanted to do this podcast, she was investigating to see if there was something there. She asked, well, the scientist who's been working on this for years said, oh, we should go see so-and-so. So this researcher was trying to be really careful, you know, saying, okay, if these children can read minds, then, you know, they should be able to identify numbers that their parents can see and they can't see. And she wanted to, like, bring cameras and set everything up and very closely document what was happening. And in fact, she chose her, in essence, director of photography because he was a skeptic, because he was very analytical and he didn't believe in anything else besides materialism. And, you know, she wanted to make sure that she wasn't just getting swayed, that she had other voices in her ear that would find problems if there were problems. So they go to, and this is done over and over and over again, they go to this child. And I think in this case, the way they started out is the documentarian that wanted to, you know, be very careful about it. And so she downloaded a random number generator to her phone. They specified 3-digit numbers. And then what they did is they positioned the child across from the parents. And I think in that case, they actually set up a physical barrier between the parent and the child, so there was no way the child could see. And the documentarian, like, hits the random number generator 2 or 3 times to get a truly random number, shows it to the parent, and as soon as the parent looks at it, the child begins punching numbers out on their number boards and punches out that number. And these children do this consistently 20, 30 times in a row. And their success rate is most of the time 100%. And so you get to hear the audio that's going on. Now then, they do have some video footage of this on the telepathytapes.com, and some of the video footage is older, and certainly when you're looking at the video footage, there are more interactions between the children and the parents in terms of touching and things than would be ideal when it comes to, you know, really carefully conducted experiments. So I certainly can understand someone who is looking at the video footage of the older experiments, how if they were a skeptic and they saw the older experiments, they would say, well, it's obvious that these parents are just trying to make money and they've worked out this system where they've just trained their children, you know, like monkeys to respond to certain touches and do this and yada, 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 yada. But the experimentation that has been done as part of the documentation for this podcast was done in a more rigorous way, and they are raising money to do a film that they want to do under the strictest of conditions. Now, you are dealing with autistic children that have emotional control problems. I mean, there's a lot of caveats here. but it's really interesting. And the prevailing idea seems to be that these autistic children are born with such a disconnect between their physical bodies and their consciousness that they are more into what I would describe as the spiritual world than they are in the physical world. And in fact, some of these children aren't even aware that they have things like arms and legs and a body until people start working with them and pressing against their arms, trying to teach them how to do the spelling stuff. One child actually said, I didn't even know I had an arm until you put your hand on my arm. And, you know, then they become more and more aware of their bodies, and then that allows them to begin to use spelling boards and tablets and things like that. It is fascinating. It is fascinating. So anyways, I'm way over time, I'm sure, on this podcast, and I apologize for being so far over. Yeah, I'm like at 41 minutes. Highly recommend the telepathy tips. Just as a final kind of caveat, we are beginning a new year now. As I was telling a friend just today, there are some really interesting things that are being said by people who should be in the know when it comes to the AI stuff. And that is, there are multiple claims that we are going to have artificial general intelligence in 2025, and that artificial superintelligence is going to be a straight line beyond that. So with not only the LLMs, but with the new mechanisms that are being used for reasoning, the feeling among many people who should know is that artificial superintelligence will be achieved in the not too distant future. And that probably more than one company will have artificial general intelligence by the end of 2025. And as I mentioned to a friend today, there are so many companies that are trying to achieve this that it seems incomprehensible that there will not be at least one company that will rush to achieve this more rapidly than they should, and they will not preserve the necessary protections that need to be made, and they will not take the necessary care to ensure that only goodness and light comes from these artificial general intelligence models. So 2025 is going to be an interesting year. I just don't see any other way that 2025 can be anything but an interesting year. But Jesus is kind and Jesus is good, and we will go with him into this year. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.